So Proverbs 22 and verse number 6, you know the verse well. And so I'm just going to use this verse as a launching pad for the next couple of weeks. We began back in January preaching on family matters, and it's been scattered and it's been interrupted, but we've tried to emphasize the home life on Sunday nights. And I've dealt with as many subjects as I have felt as have been relevant, and we come now to the subject of parenting. And so it's my intent to deal with parenting probably for the next 3, maybe 4 weeks at the most, and then we'll move on. And other than marriage, it's probably the most pertinent for our church because we have a lot of young families, we have a lot of babies, have a lot of children, have a lot of youth in the church. And if we didn't have that, then there really wouldn't be any need for this. And I don't mean to isolate anybody who does not have children or whose children are grown up and you're beyond the parenting stage, like we are. But you can look around and you can see that in our church we need regular instruction from the Word of God on how to raise our children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord.
Right.
Now, I have about 20 sermons in my archives that I have preached on training children. And back in January when I began this series, I thought that when I got here, I would just go back to that because I've preached some wonderful messages on child rearing and given great advice that is very rarely followed. And I thought, well, this time I'll go back and get it and I would pull that out. And I've not done that. I'm not going to go back to any of the material and rehash what I've already said. In fact, I'm going to do something tonight that is a little bit unusual for me, and that is that I am going to borrow heavily from another man's material. I'm going to borrow from Brother Lee Cadenhead. Brother Cadenhead had a series of messages that I listened to sometime back, a couple of years back, on the home. And when he got to parenting, the way that he laid it out, I thought was excellent. And as preachers say, that once you preach it from a Baptist pulpit, it is now public domain, is what it is, all right? There is no copyright. However, I emailed Brother Cadenhead, and I asked him, do you mind if I use your outline? He said, absolutely not. And so I'm not preaching his sermon. I'm not preaching his material, but I am taking his structure and his general idea, and I want to give him credit for that. And I won't say anything new tonight, nothing that hasn't already been said, but I pray that the Lord gives us fresh insight and fresh inspiration on how to raise our children. Because I am confident that for those families who do still have children at home, and for those who have grandchildren now, you're in that stage, that it is our desire to see the best for our children spiritually. Above all things, spiritually. And so I pray the Lord would help us for this. So train up a child in the way he should go. And when he is old, he will not depart from it. So the first thought that I would give you tonight is that it gives us the task of training a child. Now, Proverbs 22:6, and we will be in Proverbs again on Wednesday night in the Proverbs series. But that's probably the most familiar verse in the Bible on child rearing. And the very first question that we have to approach is this verse an ironclad promise or is it a general principle? And we've talked about that, several of us, we've talked about it. But does Proverbs 22:6 mean that no child raised in a godly manner will ever rebel or get away from his Christian upbringing? On the reverse, does this mean that if your child does go astray in their older years, then it's your fault? That you obviously did something wrong. Now, I will tell you that there are things that happen behind the walls of a home that you and I don't know about. When a man loses 5 kids, 6 kids, then you might have reason to say something is going on in that home that we might not have known about. However, I will also say that I know preachers, pastors, who are better preachers than me, who are godlier than I am, who are better parents than I, but their children are not in church and mine are. And there is no way that you're going to get me to say that is because I had the secret sauce in raising kids and they didn't. I don't believe that. So the interpretation of Proverbs 22:6, it falls into two or three different camps. And I think one of the first mistakes that we make when we come to this verse and we consider this is that we place an overemphasis on the promise and not on the condition. But we tend to dwell more on the promise that he will never depart, and we don't say a whole lot about the obligation to train him up in the way that he should go. So the first thing that we need to know is that there is an obligation before you can claim the promise. And I know a lot of parents that want to use the verse as a get out of jail card just in case their children go astray, but they haven't met the requirements of the verse. So before we debate as to whether it is a promise or not, let's first of all talk about the obligation. Let's spend some time making sure that we have got that part right. I think another mistake that we make when we come to this verse is that we use it as a burden of guilt when children do go astray. There are many good parents who did the best that they could. But when their teenager or their young adult went astray, they look at this verse and they pour guilt upon themselves. And it might be that you did a poor job. It might be that you failed as a parent. Or it might be that when your child becomes a young adult, that they get to make their own choices. And they don't always make good choices. Jacob is what, 25, 26? Somewhere in that vicinity. If Jacob decided tonight to quit church, would that be a result of my poor parenting? Or would that just be a bad choice he's making? Who would be responsible? Now, I certainly would be saddened by that. I would be heartbroken by that. But I don't feel that I would feel guilty for that because I'm not responsible for his decisions now. Right. And so Proverbs 22 verses 6 is not intended to make you feel guilty for decisions that your young adult children make that are against how you raised them. Maybe it is your fault. Maybe you were a lousy parent. Maybe what went on behind the walls of the home was nothing like what we saw in church. Or maybe everybody is responsible for the decisions they make, including your children, as they get older. I think another mistake that we make when we come to this verse is that we use it as a promise that the prodigal will always come home again. That no matter how far the prodigal goes, this is a promise that he will eventually come back. You can rest in the promise that if you train that child right, that child may go to the world 4 years, but here it is, he's going to come back eventually. That's not what it says. It doesn't say he's going to come back. It says he'll never depart. I don't believe that this verse is written with the prodigal in mind. I hope the prodigal does come home. But some of them don't. I hope that you have hope for your prodigal and that you never quit praying. But I don't believe that this is what this verse is written for. I believe the verse is meant to be more preventive than corrective. And so I take the statement as this. I don't take it as blame to any parent whose children who disappoint them. I don't take it guilt to every parent whose children grow up and make foolish decisions. I don't take it a promise that no matter how far your child gets away from God, he will eventually come. I believe that the statement is about establishing character in your children and that character becoming fixed in their hearts and in their lives. And you cannot guarantee your child's Christianity, and you cannot guarantee godliness in your children because their relationship with God is on them. And there's many godly fathers who have sons who are not as godly as they raised them to be. So you can't force godliness in your children, but what you can do is you can instill character in them, and that character will be a part of the warp and the woof, the fabric of their life all the way into adulthood. You direct them in a way of life, and that training stays with them for the rest of their life. I think that's what it's talking about. Train up a child. And the first thing that I would just say is that this training takes place first and primarily in the home. And some have the idea that if I have my children in a good church, that somehow that good church will override the lack of training in the home. Being a good parent, being a godly parent does not guarantee success in your children, and being in a good church does not guarantee success. Now, I cannot overemphasize the importance of being in a good church, of belonging to a good church, of being committed to that church, of bringing your family to church as a family. I believe that. I think tonight that some of you are sincere and you want what's good for your home, but you're very undisciplined in church attendance, and you are going to wake up one day to see that you have made a huge mistake and it's too late to fix it. You teach your children more by what you do than what you say. And there's some of you that are teaching your children that there are 1,001 excuses not to come to church. That is what you are teaching of them. There are young couples who get married and they are not really strong in their convictions. They're just kind of wishy-washy. But when you bring a child into that home and everything you do now is going to influence them, I would think that right there would be enough to say, I need to get serious about this. So having your children in church is extremely important. But bringing your children to church is not training up a child. In fact, and I want us to be very personal and very practical tonight. If you have young children in our church, I think that you have an excellent opportunity in Master's Club. I am so impressed with what those children are learning in Master's Club. I don't understand a parent letting their small child decide if they want to be involved or not. Do you let them decide if they want to go to bed? Do you let them decide if they want to do their chores? Do you let them decide if they want to go to school? When it comes to something that is good for them, I'll make that decision for you. Right. Having said so, it is not the pastor's job to train up your child. The church is there to reinforce the training in the home, not to replace the training in the home. If you are not diligent in the home, it is not reasonable to expect that bringing your children to church 2 or 3 hours a week is going to be sufficient for their spiritual upbringing. You need the church. Your children need the church. But training takes place in the home. In the home. A lot of churches have a vibrant youth program. I'm for that. But there's a lot of families that look at the youth group, the youth program, and that's what's going to raise my children up. I want to tell you something. A Baptist church youth group is a great place for a child to backslide. A Baptist church youth group is a great place for your kid to hook up with another kid that is carnal as a goat. Amen. There's a lot of good, well-meaning parents that were just a little bit blind, and they put their kids in the youth group or the Christian school, and I am for both of those, and they really weren't diligent about who they are. We always took the position when our kids were little, we always took the position that just because your kids come to the same church as our kids does, doesn't mean that they're going to be real good friends. And if that offends you, then you're just going to have to be offended and die and get over whatever you want to do. It is not the responsibility of the youth group or the Christian school. It starts in the home. It starts in the home. It's your responsibility. Now what does it mean to train someone? To train up a child. Train up a child. Well, Dad's in the garage and he is He's working in the car and his little boy is helping him. So here's what Dad does. He says, hand me a wrench. Hand me a rag. Hold this ratchet. Clean up that mess. He ain't trained him to do anything. Or he could take the time to show him how to change the oil. Teach him why we do it. Why it is important to change the oil. Answer Christ. One of them is telling. One of them is training. And just telling him what to do is not training. Now you bring that over into the moral sense. You can tell your girl what she has to wear, or you can teach her why modesty is important. You can tell your children, don't listen to that music, or you can take the time to explain why we don't listen to that music, why it is harmful to listen to that music, what guides us in choosing music. You can tell them, or you can train them. And there's a lot of parents that are telling their children everything that is right. Everything that you're telling is right, but you're not training them how to live the right life.
Amen.
One mistake that I have seen a lot of parents make is in not doing any real training, but then they're real quick to chastise their children when that child makes a mistake. The idea that training is 10% instruction and 90% correction. And we'll deal with spanking. We'll get to that wonderful subject in a couple of weeks. But spanking can actually become a lazy reaction in place of the hard work of training.
Right.
If a parent is impatient, or if a parent is lazy, if a parent just wants to sit on the couch and watch TV all day and bothered by the fact that they have children, then they get frustrated and they just yank the child up and just start welling away. And I deplore that. That's child abuse is what that's called. That's not discipline, all
right?
That's your laziness is what it is. Spanking your child should never be because you are too lazy to teach and explain, because when you do, you are doing more damage than you are doing good. And if you do the hard work in training, then your training becomes more preventive than it becomes corrective. Training is more preemptive than just trying to fix the mess that somebody messed up with. So training has two components. It has discipline and it has instruction. It's not just barking out orders. It's telling why. It's explaining why. It's showing why. It's instilling knowledge and skill and character. There's a law of hermeneutics. It's called the principle of first mention, that when you find a word in the Bible for the first time, look at it carefully, that generally sometimes that there will be a meaning or a connotation that will be carried throughout the rest of the Bible. Not always, but sometimes. And the first time that the word trained appears in your Bible is in Genesis chapter 14. And you don't have to turn there, but in Genesis chapter 13, Lot, the nephew of Abraham, had gotten himself in trouble. He and his family had been captured by those five kings. And so in Genesis chapter 14, Abraham takes, 218, I think, he takes a number of trained servants. That's the first time the word shows up. Trained servants to go and to rescue Lot and his family. Well, if I was going to a fight, I would want to go with somebody that's trained instead of somebody that's untrained. Right? We flew home the other night and coming from Charlotte to Pensacola, and usually when you fly into Pensacola, there'll usually be a number of Marines, young recruits are coming in. So when we flew home and half the plane was full of young Marines that were coming, I guess, just out of boot camp and coming to NAS, and they were coming here to be trained. They're going to be either a mechanic or a pilot or some cybersecurity something, but they are coming to be trained. Now you can tell your little boy to clean his room, or you can show him how. I know what I expect. He may not know. He doesn't know how unless you show him. Your little girl doesn't know how to wash dishes unless you show her how to do that. And what you want to do is you want to train them so they know what is expected, how to do what is expected of them, and it becomes so proficient that it becomes second nature to them, training them. So train up a child. So let me make it personal, all right? Let's just put it down in our lap so that we can understand it. I think that one of the early jobs of training children is how to sit in church. Yeah. I would say at least by age three. Probably two, but at least by age three, a child should be expected to be able to sit in church, to sit quietly. Probably writing or coloring or doodling or something to occupy them, but not creating a scene, not running up and down the pews, and just sit there. And they don't understand everything that's going on. They're not going to get anything out of this message. But they understand more than what you think. They pick up a whole lot more than what you think. But that's training. That's training. Now, when a child acts up, you've got a couple of choices, all right? And what you have to do is you have to think beyond the moment of distraction. What training are you instilling in that child? So the child acts up, you take them to the floor, you let them play for the rest of the service. Or you take them to the nursery and let them play in the nursery, have some fun. Here's what you have done. You have trained them. When they call you, you have to take them out of master's club, and so you take them to the playground to get a service. You have taught them something, is what you've done. You trained them. Right? Now you apply this to every area of life. Now here's the thing. If you take that child out, and you make it so hot out there that she can't wait to get back in here, you've trained them. Right? If you called me and said, you know, Johnny is hitting Susie in junior church and I have to come and get him. Well, here's what I'm going to do. I am going to make it so, I'm going to find a private spot and I'm going to make it so uncomfortable that Billy cannot wait to get back in junior church. And if I have to do it 10 times, I'll do it 10 times. But he will get the idea that the last thing that I want is to have to leave this auditorium. This is the safest place that I can be at this time. I know that there are exceptions. I know he's going to use the bathroom. I know all of that. But the general pattern is that he's trained to sit in church. And the last thing... We had a kid one time that a parent took him out. And he knew what was getting ready to happen. And I mean, in the middle of service, he started, he's going to kill me. He's going to kill me. He's going to kill me. That's what you want him to think, huh? Somebody rescue me, huh? Yeah. Oh, it takes a lot of time. It takes hard work. It takes consistency. I'll give you another example. I think another mistake that parents make is using anger in place of training. So there are some people that always discipline, corporal discipline, only in anger. But a spanking should never be in anger. You may get frustrated and you want to pull your hair out, but there should never be any anger in corruption. And I'll just say this because I'm sure that my kids will think of this. Yeah, Daddy, come on, Daddy. I don't know that I had 100% track record on this. Okay. But you didn't have the kids that I had either. All right. So there's a little bit of it. But when you spank your child in anger, you are creating a whole plethora of problems. And one of them is you are training them to respond to your emotions and not your commands. Only when mommy raises her voice do I really need to pay attention. Only when daddy calls me by my middle name and gets a little loud, now I know we have reached a breaking point, huh? I mean, you tell him to do something umpteen times and he ignores you because he knows you're not going to do anything about it. And then you start raising your voice and start berating them. What you have done is you have trained them to respond to the volume of your voice only when mommy gets loud. Now we'll step up. So train up a child. Now what are the prerequisites for training a child? You have to be committed to the task. I think that lazy parenting is the scourge of many homes. So what we're talking about is going to take a lot of time and it's going to take hard work. If you are a stay-at-home mom, a lot of this is going to fall on you. If you are a stay-at-home mom and you spend hours on social media and Facebook and TV, then you're probably going to be too lazy in raising your children. It's okay. If you are a dad and you are so wrapped up in whatever hobby that you have and you spend all of your spare time on it and you don't have time for your kids when you come home from work, you're probably going to be too lazy in training your children. But here's what you have to have yourself. You have to have some personal discipline yourself. Every parent in here knows what it is to have a child who is just like you. Except me. But every other parent knows. And isn't it frustrating to have a child that gets all of their bad traits from you? Huh? I mean, it's really hard to beat them for their stubbornness when you know where they got that from. But rather than getting frustrated at the child, let it put some humility in you and let it motivate you to be the person that you ought to be. If you have an anger issue, you still have to discipline the anger in your child. But make sure you've disciplined the anger in you too. You got to have some. So train up a child. In Isaiah 6 and verse 1, I saw the Lord high and lifted up. On the throne, high and lifted up. And his train filled the temple. Now, I know it's talking about a different kind of train, but the train of a garment is something that follows behind. Abby was up here yesterday and she had the wedding gown and it has the train that follows. So it is something that follows you. So you train them so that they follow you down the path of life. You are headed in a direction and you want them to go in that direction and to follow you like a train does a bridal gown. But the question is not, are your children going in the right direction? The question is, are you going in the right direction? Is your life worth following? How can you train them to go in the way they should go if you're not going in the way you should go as well? There's got to be some consistency. The task of training. But then the timing of training. Train up a child. The earlier, the better. You cannot start too soon. Now, you can spank a child too soon. Okay? You can spank an infant that has no idea why that infant is being spanked. And so you can spank too soon. But you can begin training almost immediately. In fact, I believe you can start training before the child is born. Yeah. I tell you something. Tomorrow, they're supposed to hand down the Supreme Court decision about Roe versus Wade. I think that's supposed to come down tomorrow. Since 1973, we have aborted over 60 million babies in the United States alone. Now I'm going to tell you, you'll have no argument against this. That is barbaric. That is murder. That is demonic. That is evil. Every pagan culture has some form of child sacrifice that is satanic. And what we have done in the United States under the protection of the Supreme Court is no better than the worst that any pagan culture has done. And abortion is really child sacrifice is what it is. It is satanic, I believe with all of my heart, and we now have a government that is openly advocating for infanticide, abortion up to birth. And it is so evil that it is hard to comprehend. By the way, nobody advocating for that believes or does not believe that it is a living child in that womb. No longer is the argument that it is a fetus. We're talking about up to birth. That's not a fetus in the third trimester. That is a child. But they are so deranged that they're so openly saying that there should be no limits on abortion. Let me help you with something. Genesis chapter 16, Hagar and Ishmael. Hagar. And the angel comes to Hagar and says, behold, thou art with child. That's what he said. Thou art with child. The thing inside of Hagar was a child. The unborn is a human baby. While over and over you read in scripture, she was with child. She was with child. She was with child. So I say that childhood does not begin at birth. It begins at conception. And you can begin the process of influencing that child before that child is even born. You know, I don't have proof of this, but you know mothers who sing to their babies. They talk to their babies in the womb. You say, oh, come, that has no effect. Well, I'll tell you, a mama that drinks has effect. A mama that smokes and a mama that does drugs. And there have been babies that have been born addicts. There have been babies that have been born the alcoholic syndrome, and I don't know what else to, how else to say that, but there have been babies that have been born with addictions because of what their mother did while they were in the womb. Well, if that can happen, then there is a sense that training for good can happen even before the child is born. Hannah dedicated her son to the Lord before he was even conceived, and she made decisions before Samuel was born that directed his life into the ministry. And I'm simply saying that, the earliest stage of child training, you want to begin as early as you can. Now, I'm talking about these little babies now. Here's the first concept that you train. And I've got so many things I want to say, and I'm watching the time. The first concept that you want to train that little baby is obedience. Because if you do not teach them obedience, you will not be able to teach them anything else. They don't need to know why. They just must obey. That is why the word no is such an important word. Measured, quietly, calmly, firmly, but insisting that you obey. And we'll deal with that more in detail, but they must obey. And when your children are very small, I think it is a mistake to put everything out of reach. Don't do that. You know, you don't put all the things in the, no, you teach them not to touch. And I know that there's one writer that advocates that you ought to set them up. Set something there as a temptation. And there's a fine line between temptation and training. I don't believe that. But I believe that you just leave everything as it is. Man, we've safeguarded the house and locked everything up and covers on the outlets and everything. He's not going to stick his finger in there many times, all right? He'll be okay. But you tell them no, and you enforce that one rule. And if you'll be, listen, if you will be consistent and if you will be firm, there is not a child in here that cannot learn to obey and be happy doing it, and you'll be happier too. The task of training, the timing of training, the trajectory of training. Train up a child in the way he should go. Now, there is a universal way that every child ought to go. He ought to get saved. He ought to love God. He ought to live a separated life. There's a general way. The commands and the principles of the Bible are universal. This is the general way that every child ought to go. Spiritually and morally and character-wise, we all have the same goal for our children. But there is a separate, unique way that children should go. They're not robots. They're all different. Children have unique personalities. They have unique strengths. They have unique weaknesses. Even in the same home, it is amazing how different siblings can be. And what we do is we recognize that, and we have to guide children in the same way, spiritually and morally, but in unique ways in how they are. There's not a one-size-fits-all cookie-cutter approach. There are some children that respond very well to encouragement, and there are some children that just melt at any word of rebuke. And you might have a strong-willed child, and you might have another child that is just so compliant, and you've got to know how to deal with those different children.
Right.
So what do you teach these children? The trajectory. And there are several lessons. I'll give you just a couple of them. Here's the first lesson in training up a child. It is the lesson of honesty. The very worst thing that can happen to your child is for your child to grow up to be a liar. It would be better for your child to smoke cigarettes than to be a liar. And there are some children that just have a propensity to lie. That they just lie. Some lie when it's convenient to get out of trouble. Others, they just lie. In Psalm 58 and verse 3 says, the wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they're born, speaking lies. And I'm amazed that some parents think that their children would never lie. They do. They will take the word of their lying child over the word of a teacher or another adult. I want to speak to every parent here tonight. Listen to me. Your child is a liar. All of them. Your child is a liar. He was born that way. Your job is to get the lying out of him. Yeah. Philippians 4 and verse 8. Finally, my brethren, think on these things. Whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest. Were they the same thing? Whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest. Is there a difference between true and honest things? So your son says, Dad, I'm going to take the car. I'm going to Whataburger, meet with some friends. I'll be back at 9 o'clock. So he takes the car. He goes to Whataburger, drives to the parking lot, and then goes to a friend's house that you don't approve of, meets with friends. He's back at 9 o'clock. Was he true? Yeah. Was he honest? Not in your life. So you want a child that will tell the truth, but also live an honest life. And that's important because you live in a very dishonest world. The whole world. The whole world operates on lying and cheating. It used to be that a man's word was his bond. Very rarely is that so now. And listen, it is to the point where you expect people to lie to you. I haven't poked a hole in it yet, but I'm sure you're telling me a lie somewhere. Huh? So you have to train your children to tell the truth and to be honest. Psalm 15 says that they are speaking truth in his heart, in his heart. You've got to be honest with yourself first. And then in verse 4, he that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not. He swears something to his own hurt and changes not. He said he would do something, and then he discovered, if I do this, I'm going to get hurt. It's going to cost me some money. But it says he's going to do it. And I'm going to keep my word. And his word means more to him than money. His word means more to him than making a deal. Lesson number one is we always tell the truth. And parents know when their child is lying. Right? You know. But sometimes you don't have forensic evidence, but you know. And you have to have balance. I mean, everything is not a corporal offense. If he spills milk at the table, he might not need a whipping for that. He might throw a ball through the window. You can replace the window, but don't lie about it. If I ask you, then you tell me the truth. He needs to learn honesty. Honesty. Here's the second thing that he has to learn, and I won't get all of these, and I mentioned this, is that's obedience. Obedience. Why teach them obedience? Here's why. Because as an adult, they will always have somebody over them telling them what to do, and you need to teach them that they need to be obedient and submissive to authority. Every child in here ought to be taught to obey immediately, cheerfully, carefully, without whining, without being told 19 times. And your child can do that. And every child in here is going to test whether you mean it or not. Partial obedience is total disobedience. If you tell them to pick up their toys, they should pick up all of the toys. And you have to give them grace. They might not forget, or they might not do it perfectly. But you know if they're testing you. And if they're testing you, I'm telling you that you better win that little skirmish. And some of you want to argue with your children. You want to explain to them why they have to obey. And you want to give them reasons. And one day, he's going to be old enough where he's going to want a reason, an explanation, a teenager. But a four-year-old does not need an explanation. Because I said so, that's the explanation, all right? That is the rule. I said so, I'm bigger than you. I'm the king of this house. I pay whatever it might be. I said so. Now, for a teenager, you might want to give an explanation, all right? You can explain to him the wisdom of what I'm trying to tell you. But a three-year-old, the wisdom is, I said so. And obedience is to be immediate. It is to be immediate. It is to be complete. It is without arguing. It is without whining. It is to be with a good attitude. We have little children in Master's Club that will look at the teacher and say, I don't know what you say. Honestly. I know you don't believe that, but I will. I don't do what you say. You're my daddy. Just defiant. Just openly defiant. When the teacher says sit down, you ought to sit down now. Without pitching a fit. And that ought to alarm you. It ought to scare, because you got to get beyond the one act and see, what are you training your child to be? And so many parents make so many excuses. Well, he's not feeling good. He didn't get enough sleep. He's nervous around crowds. He didn't get his chocolate milk today. Whatever it might be. But there is a world out there that is not going to make any excuses for him or her. Now, I will tell you, I'll be done. If you expect obedience, it is only clear that your expectations be crystal clear. you think you said something and you think that everybody knows what you mean, you better make sure that your instructions are clear before you start chastising them for confusion instead of disobedience. I tell Parker, and Parker would be glad to be used as an example of a disobedient child. I say, Parker, I need you to clean the garage. Now, the immediate stuff is out the window. I'll just tell you right there. Now, Parker and I have different ideas of what it means to clean the garage. Okay? When I say, Parker, clean the garage, what he's thinking is push everything to the side, make a path big enough to get to the door. That's just... Okay. I have a slightly different idea than that. So I have to take Parker to the garage. And I have to explain, this is what I mean by clean the garage. Now, I haven't fun at his expense, obviously, and I'll buy him a milkshake later or whatever. But you got to make sure the expectations are clear.
Right.
Honesty and obedience. Non-negotiables. Non-negotiables. We have a lot of good families in our church, a lot of ground to cover. We'll take a couple of weeks. We'll look at other subjects. And our church is blessed with families and children and all age brackets. We had an old people dinner at the thing, and we had all kinds of old people. And I love the young and the old. And we enjoyed the years, I think 4 years before we had children. So we enjoyed the years before we had children. And then we had children. And now we're enjoying our grandchildren. And I think I said that right, didn't I? I encourage you tonight to have strong families, to have Christian homes and pleasant homes. I know some situations right now that are so toxic and they're so dysfunctional, they can't be fixed. And you can do so much damage that it can't ever be undone. And that doesn't have to be your home. Every marriage in here can model Christ and the church in your marriage. And every home in here can have pleasant, obedient, respectful children. And every home can be disciplined and organized and clean and cheerful. And it takes work and it takes consistency and it takes honesty and a lot of God's grace. And God will come alongside of you and God will help you. But you've got to take the responsibility. You got to say, this is my, it's not the pastor's job, it's not the youth group, it's my responsibility. I'm not worried about the promise so much, I'm making sure that I'm taking care of the obligation. Train up a child. I got to take care of that first.